Welcome to There's an Elephant in Your Office. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Andrea.
And together, we're advancing the conversation about mental health in the workplace.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of There's an Elephant in Your Office. We are glad you're here, and today we're going to talk about reasonable accommodations.
That's right. Reasonable accommodations are things that you already have seen, like an elevator or a wheelchair ramp. But get ready for this. We're going to blow your minds. Psychiatric disability is a thing, and you can qualify for reasonable accommodations through the ADA. And Andrea's kind of laughing. I had no idea this was a thing until I really needed it. And she said, hey, have you asked for any accommodations? I said, no, what's that? Can I have one?
Right. Because it goes back to the entire stigma of mental illness and mental health not being visible. Therefore, there's not as much support outwardly for it. And people don't think of the same types of accommodations as if you had sprained your ankle in your own crutches, or you have a permanent disability such as, you know, eyesight or hearing or some of those things that we're more familiar with. No less valid, just less known.
That's right. That's why we're going to talk about it today. So exactly. I have pulled the Americans with Disabilities Act, and what it says very specifically is what counts as a psychiatric disability. Okay, so this is kind of boring, but it's the official word. Someone who has a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activities, has a record of such, or is regarded as having such. And so then they go on to say a mental impairment is any mental or psychological disorder. That's it. So basically, if you have any kind of mental health condition, depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, even eating disorders, this sounds terrible, but as long as it limits one or more of your major life activities, then you qualify under the ADA for some type of reasonable accommodation.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, I don't know, I could see them almost buffing against the thought of having a quote psychiatric disability because it sounds so big and intimidating. And you're like, well, I'm not that bad. You know, I'm functioning. I can hold a job. I can make it through the day, but it doesn't mean you can't. And it just means that maybe there's one or two little things that you could do to make it even easier for yourself to get through the day. So it's not as scary as it sounds.
And I'll tell you what really helped me, I guess, except that I qualified as an American with a disability, is they have another question and it says, what about the effects of medication? And it says, if your mental impairment, when left untreated, AKA, if you do not take your meds, your life activities are impacted. Okay, well, if I don't take my meds ever, I am not a functioning human being, and no, I can't go to work and do my job like I'm supposed to. It was a big aha, holy crap, at the same time moment to realize that when I do what I'm supposed to do and take care of myself, I'm awesome. But if I didn't have that, I really would fall into this non-functioning category. So that's what I want people to kind of think about is in your natural, unaltered, unmedicated state, how well do you function?
So I think it would be helpful to have a definition of what reasonable accommodation is, because I'm going to keep saying it a whole bunch of times.
Yes, definitions are good.
So a reasonable accommodation is simply a modification or adjustment to a job, the work environment, or the way things usually are done that enables a qualified individual with a disability to enjoy an equal employment opportunity. It's a lot of words, but what it really means is a little tweak or an adjustment that helps you do the work like anybody without a disability would for the same opportunities.
Right. If you are not qualified for a job, they are not going to hire you for that job. It doesn't have anything to do with accommodations. That's, do you fit the job description? What we're talking about is if you qualify for a job and you're hired, and let's just say, for instance, you need to use the elevator. Okay, use the elevator. You have that accommodation. Now you can work like everybody else.
Right. And so the question that we're posing here is, how does that extend to the more hidden accommodations that might be needed for a mental health condition?
Right. So some really simple examples are noise control. Okay. If your environment is really loud and you get distracted and it makes you anxious and unable to concentrate, you can wear some headphones, noise canceling headphones. That's an accommodation. One of my favorites going into this season of not as much sunlight is a light box. Okay, mm-hmm. Literally a box that sits on your desk and you turn it on for 30 minutes in the morning, and that light helps you not be horribly depressed. Those are examples of reasonable accommodations for mental health.
Yeah, I've seen that one quite a bit since I've moved to Portland, because the seasonal affective disorder is a real thing because of the lack of sunlight for a good portion of the year here. And so that's a very reasonable and quite common one that I've actually seen around.
Yeah. And another one that I think is so important, but we just don't think about it, is flexibility in your work schedule. So let's say every third Thursday at 1 o'clock, I need to go have my therapy appointment with my therapist or my counselor. So on that third Thursday of the month, I'm going to take my lunch break at 1 o'clock instead of 11:30. I don't get more hours. I don't get more time. I don't get any special favors. They just know on that particular day, I have an alternate lunchtime. That is another reasonable accommodation.
Yeah. And of course, that can get a little trickier if you are on a production line or at a call center. But that's part of the process we'll talk about in a little while, is the back and forth to get that sorted out. But it is a reasonable accommodation and request for something like an appointment that happens very consistently on such a day within the month.
Right. And also with your work hours, you may not think about it, but being able to work part-time or remotely, like a lot of us have done since, you know, pandemic, but also having a consistent schedule, those are actually reasonable accommodations.
Yeah. And of course, easier in some places than others, but these are things that you are able to ask and discuss. Yeah.
Just examples. There's actually a really great website, and it's the Job Accommodation Network, but they shorten it, and it's Jan, like a lady's name. And so the website is askjan.org. I'll link it in the show notes. And officially, it's the leading source of free expert and confidential guidance on workplace accommodations and disability employment issues. But Adria, I think for HR people, but also just for the employee, it's so much more than just a website. It's so helpful.
It really is. And just a funny side story, the first few times that I heard about this website, I was so confused, because I was like, who's Jan? And why does she have all the answers? And
why do I have to ask her?
I didn't make the connection until I actually Googled it. And then I was like, oh, it's an acronym. So Jan is the expert here. So, you know, it's free, it's confidential guidance, and it has a plethora of kind of examples and real life scenarios that have happened that people have asked about. And then you can see the kind of best practices guidance. So if you're new to this from the HR world, or if you're a manager who's had this come up, or if you're a person that just wants to know what your options are, it is one of the best sources of real, helpful, reliable information that I have found for all sorts of things. I've used it quite a bit.
Right. And it's divided into kind of the employee section and then more specific parts for employers or people who are trying to find out, you know, very specifically about laws or things that as a corporation they have to do. So regardless of your, are you an employee or an owner or an HR person, everybody can ask Jan. She has all the answers.
Yeah. And I did notice that there is a coronavirus section on the website as well. So, you know, even if there are specific questions, you know, during this time specifically, they even have up-to-date information about that. So they also link to the EEOC and all sort of other safety related small business, self-employment resources, articles, all sorts of things.
That's great. And I can tell you just from, again, looking at the site, some of the key accommodations that they mention are flexible schedules, which we already talked about, modified break schedules, that's going to therapy on the third Thursday of the month. And then they talk about rest areas or private spaces. And that's really if you are having, you know, a panic attack, if you are experiencing very severe symptoms, you need someplace private that you can go and kind of get yourself together. That is listed on here too. So those are the key accommodations that I guess people are asking Jan about.
You know, the rest area and private space is a really interesting one because it makes all the sense that somebody who's having something like a panic attack or, you know, even epilepsy or having a really just difficult mental health crisis moment would want a private place to go.
Right.
I think a lot of businesses and HR people are nervous about private spaces for a lot of the reasons you think we would be nervous about private spaces, mm-hmm. Because adults don't always respect the workplace and do, you know, maybe some unsavory things in private spaces. So
that's right.
You know, I think that is an interesting one. And even if you can't carve out or don't want to carve out a nap room, you know, I've heard of that, or a cry room. I've heard of that.
Yep.
these are options you could choose to do, but also even if there's an office with a door or your HR person's office, I can assure you, we have all been the cry room at many times. So, you know, it's just identifying where a safe place would be for someone to go, even if it's not 100% dedicated all the time.
Right. It could be a bathroom that's a single person bathroom with a door that locks. Because, I mean, I'm just going to be honest and say that I've gone in the bathroom at work and cried on more occasions than I would care to admit. And I was fortunate in my workspace that it was a one person room. I could shut the door and lock it and I was good. Nobody was coming in.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes you really just need that 5 minutes to be alone, you know, then you can go back out and face the rest of your day. So scoping out a place is a good idea.
Yeah. And we might as well just go ahead and jump into the topic. So what all of this has in common is they can be helpful, but you can't just summarily decide that this is your nap room and that's cool. You kind of have to talk to people in your work setting and set it up. So from the HR perspective, from that employer point of view, Anne, what do you have to do? Like this conversation between the different people who need an accommodation?
It is a good question, and it's one that makes a lot of people nervous, especially on the management side, because there are so many rules and regulations, there are so many legalities. And I think this area in particular, I have seen more managers than any other conversation kind of throw their hands up, back away and say, let me know what I need to do. I am not touching this with a 10-foot pole because I don't want to do it wrong. They right. care. They want the person, but they don't want to mess it up. And I get that. So for the employees, it is up to the employee and it's the employee's responsibility to let us know what you need. Nobody's a mind reader. And especially for mental health concerns, you know, it may not even be obvious. Nobody may even know what's going on. So first you have to make a request.
Okay. And do I do that with HR? Or do I do that with my manager or my boss?
You could do either.
Okay.
It's going to be an interactive process, which is another phrase that you'll probably hear about if you look on any of the website or do any research. And simply what an interactive process is the back and forth to work out a solution. So if an employee says, I need more sunlight, and so I need you to move my desk to the other side of the building that has the window, it's not built out, you're going to have to build me out of space, but I need to be by the window for light. Okay, maybe that's reasonable, maybe that isn't, but that doesn't mean you now have to do construction. You could say, well, that's, thank you for letting us know. Have you considered a blue light? Just to go back to that example,
Right.
there are other ways to get that light that don't require construction, in this example. Or they may say, I can't work in this area because everybody's too loud. I need to use this conference room 100% of the time. Well, you don't have to give up your conference room necessarily. You could say, okay, I hear you. Noise is a problem. What if we try noise-canceling headphones?
Right. Or
So it's,
this is hilarious. I have this at work. And so when I go to the office, I actually go in the copy machine room in this tiny little cubby behind the copy machine because it's quiet and the rest of the office is just open and cubicles.
Yeah, and if that works and it's fine, then it's fine. That's a reasonable accommodation. So what it really comes down to is you have to work together. The employee and the HR person generally are going back and forth, and the HR person will get input and, suggestions and recommendations of what works with the manager. But it has to be a solution that works for the business and the person. And that may end up being a totally different solution than what the employee originally suggested, but one that works equally as well.
Right. And on the Ask Jan website, so if you're an employee like I was a few years ago, and you're like, an accommodation, I don't even know how to start thinking about it. Well, some of the beginning questions are, what limitation do you have? What is your problem, basically? What part of your job can you not do well because of the light, the noise, the room, the whatever it is? And so if you think you need an accommodation, start there and be very specific when you go to the HR person or your manager of, this is what part of my job I cannot do. This is what I think a solution is. And then kind of the part you just said where it starts that interactive discussion.
Exactly. And another example that comes to mind is the standing desk. So I remember a couple of years ago at a place of employment, the standing desk was all the rage and everybody wanted one.
Yes.
But I think they're, I don't know, $300 or $400 a pop. So, you got to budget for that and allocate it, et cetera. And so the business had made the decision to require a doctor's note showing that ergonomically, from your chiropractor or your main physician or someone that you needed that as an accommodation to work.
Okay.
So I wouldn't want anyone to be surprised that there may be a doctor's note required for some part or all of the accommodation request. It's not personal, but if you're asking for an accommodation, especially one that is going to cost the business money, they may require a doctor's note
So
on that topic.
how detailed does that doctor's note have to be? Because I'm thinking of like patient confidentiality stuff, and maybe I don't want you to know my whole medical history. So how much does the employer have to know to grant an accommodation?
Yeah, it's a good point. And again, this would run through the HR department to maintain confidentiality, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, in this case, it was a note from a chiropractor or a physician saying, due to this person's needs, they require a standing desk, or I would recommend a standing desk
Yes.
for their ergonomic health, or, whatever. It doesn't have to say they have scoliosis or they have this. I mean, it didn't have to give a diagnosis, but a recommendation of an accommodation from a health provider sometimes is required
Okay.
depending on the business.
Good. And so we shouldn't be scared if I'm just saying, like, me as an employee, if you're my HR person, and you say, I'd like to have some kind of documentation so that we can. Do this officially, then I'm going to call my therapist or my doctor, and I'm sure they've done this before, so they're going to know what to send back to work. And it's probably like when they do a like after you have surgery, all you get's a note that says you're released to go back to work, and that's it. That's all it says.
And it does typically say you're released to go back with no restrictions. And that is an important part of the doctor's note, because a lot of people, when they return to work, sometimes there are accommodations or restrictions requested. So that's a great example of how you may not even know you're doing it, but when you come back from a leave for a medical purpose and there's any alteration, that in itself is an accommodation that's being requested by your provider.
Yeah, like light duty. I think that's a pretty common phrase, especially you and I know the manufacturing world. And if you have surgery, you can't go back to running some of those machines. So you have to go on light duty and do something else until you're, you know, 6 weeks are up or whatever.
Exactly. Now, the another thing I would say for any managers, business people, HR people out there, you know, word of caution, I would be very wary of outright denying a request for reasonable accommodation. You're going to want to go through the interactive process and try and find a middle ground. But if you truly believe it's unreasonable and you cannot find a middle ground, you're going to need to be able to prove without a shadow of a doubt that you couldn't do anything, which normally is a very difficult bar. And also the cost in itself usually is not going to get you out of that, unless it would be, you know, a huge amount of like construction budget or something that's just totally unreasonable. But, you know, if you're a functioning business and someone asks you for something that's reasonable and isn't outrageous, it's very difficult to prove that there is nothing you could do to meet them halfway or most of the way or find an alternate solution. And so if for whatever reason you find yourself in that situation where you actually want to outright deny it, I would highly recommend consulting an employment attorney before you go that route or say anything to the employee about a denial.
Right. Because like you said, this is a very slippery subject and you have to approach it with caution, but you can start that interactive process. And then if it turns out, you know, you're like, oh, I talked to him and we're going to deny this, that's when you would go to your employment attorney. I guess I'm just trying to say for the people who may need it, don't be afraid to go start the conversation thinking that they're automatically going to reject you.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, we want people to perform. And if the accommodation is to help you perform better and more fully, it should be a win-win.
Yeah. If I do my best writing from a cubby hole behind the copy machine, who cares? I get who my cares? Stuff done. It costs who cares? You, it costs you $0 to let me hide behind the copy machine and have the white noise of that thing running all day so I can concentrate, right? I know that is a ridiculous example, but it made such a huge difference to me. Like I couldn't work well in that big open room and everybody's on the phone and talking to each other, and like it just was too overwhelming. So who knows what your accommodation may actually end up being?
Well, and that's exactly why it is such an individualized conversation, and you really can't get any more specific in a venue like this because it is so tailored to that individual and what they need, which everybody's different. So, you know, I would say a lot of the accommodations I've seen in my experience tend to fall into a couple of categories. One is scheduling, like you mentioned, either a different start time. So some people have a really hard time making it at a certain time or a certain day. I also have quite a bit of flexible schedules. So some people want 4:10s or, you know, just alternating this work times. And also with the coronavirus and the time that we're in with so many people working from home, it's a lot of ergonomic accommodations. And so that's been really interesting to see what accommodations we're used to seeing in the workplace, how most of that has either resolved itself or people just feel more comfortable because they're in their own space for now. But as people transition more fully back into an office setting, I would not be surprised at all if we see an uptick in accommodation requests because people have had a chance to walk away, get comfortable, and now they have to reintegrate into a less comfortable environment.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough transition. And so maybe even some of these accommodations are short-lived, but it may be the only way that your workforce can get back in that groove because holy cow, we are rusty nobody's had, you know, that normal grind since February, March, and we're in what, October? I mean, that's a really long time to not have a routine.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point that we haven't mentioned yet is that, you know, these accommodations don't have to last forever. You're not locking into a new situation that you can never deviate from for whatever reason. I mean, you should be every, you know, once a quarter, twice a year, certainly annually checking in to make sure it's still working. What tweaks do we need to make? You know, is there something different you need now? So it's on the employee to advocate on your own behalf, but also for the manager to check in as they would, you know, for everyone, I hope, to make sure things are going okay.
Yeah. And I think that's an easier conversation to have between the manager and the employee. I'm just thinking about how much I hate being called into an office and told, you know, hey, shut the door. I want to talk to you.
The worst.
So if I know my boss is going to just come around, you know, about every 6 months, say, hey, do you still like being back here in this cubby hole? And I'm going to say, I love it. And they'll say, great. Then you can stay here. I'll say, fantastic. Ask me again in 6 months. That is an easy conversation for me to have because, you know, my boss or manager, or whatever, is just checking in. It doesn't feel threatening. It's not scary. It's, hey, you've got this space. Do you still like it? Yes or no? Great. Moving on.
Yeah. And these are normal things. I mean, if you've listened to this podcast, you know by now that this stuff is common and your HR people want to help. Your managers want to do the right thing. They may not know what to do, but if nobody ever asks or bring it up and you sit there and suffer in silence, nobody wins.
That's right.
In that scenario.
That's right.
And if you are a manager of people and you're thinking to yourself, oh my gosh, this is going to open a can of worms. Now everybody's going to want something different, something special. How am I going to manage the schedules? Again, I would ask you to pause and say, if it makes them more productive, and they feel seen, heard, appreciated, validated, they are going to be so much more loyal and, you know, give so much more discretionary effort to the business than if you just put your head down and pretend like you don't know what's going on.
Yeah. And you have your whole HR group to back you up and to help you. So if you really are super nervous about this type of discussion, call in your experts. That's literally why they are employed in the HR function. Is for this kind of stuff with employees.
Yes, and I would highly recommend you do not engage in any deep conversations about accommodations without consulting your HR team.
That's right, because they're the boss.
Well, it can be tricky and people get nervous and they put their foot in their mouth and then it could just go sideways. So I don't say that to scare anybody because again, I truly believe everybody wants the best thing to happen, but people do get nervous about it. So go to the experts. You'll have support. Ask Jan. She knows everything.
She knows. Ask Jan. She knows. Well, I think on that note, we can probably wrap up for this one. And I think the summary for me is reasonable accommodations help employees and they're good for the business.
We appreciate you listening. Please like, star, follow, and share. It really helps an independent podcast like ours make it out into the world so we can help make it better for everybody. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.